we knew eventually he'd come back. I mean, really.
It's going to be a long week for me.
We knew it. It sure is. Right. Yes, it is. Do you think you can get through this one?
It's going to be tough. I sure hope so.
Hey, everybody, look who it is. It's Wendy. Remember Wendy from the old days? She's back. She's right over there. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
How was California? That's on the West Coast. They keep that. Where do they keep that? On the West Coast?
Yes. First and foremost, I was able to delete my Shake Alert app. There were no earthquakes. Actually, there were a lot of earthquakes, but none near us and none over 3.0.
I saw somewhere they categorized them as tremors. Would you say tremors? Is that a fair assessment?
There's a new word that I've never heard that they're using. Tembler.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. Bertrand, your daughter lives in L.A. Why is it called? Because it's like I could see Trembler, but it was.
Trembler was the band leader on Bozo Circus for many years.
They call it a Trembler.
That's not a word. Did they just make this up recently?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of new words since you were gone.
Boy, I missed a lot.
There's all kinds of new words.
We just were relieved you weren't at the Tower of Terror.
Yes.
Because there was a brief moment there where we all sort of clenched.
Do you know that there was an incident?
Yes.
You know that?
Yeah. Yes.
And we all assumed
it was me.
Incorrectly right that it was you.
Yeah. I knew it.
Everybody was sure it was you. And we had to clarify and say it was not you. But deep down, we thought it might be you.
We did meet up with that fighting family for lunch
at
Disneyland.
The family that slaps each other while enjoying Disneyland?
Can I tell you, our family did not slap each other once.
What?
We didn't even really get in a fight the whole trip. This was maybe the best vacation of my life with the kids.
Nice. Great to hear. We both lost money on it, but so what? Good for you.
And I'm going to say something that's going to shock you.
Here it comes. Go on.
I had fun at Disneyland.
Wendy, who are you?
I don't know.
This is so uncharacteristic.
I was there for 11 hours straight.
Yeah.
I went on over a dozen rides.
Any of the more thrill type rides?
Splash Mountain was probably
that
the most
counts.
Thrilling.
That certainly counts.
And I got over 15,000 steps that day.
Uh-huh.
And it was truly fun.
Wow.
I know.
You don't like Disney?
I just have not been a fan of Disney in the past because they ram everything down your throat. You know what it is?
What is it?
The difference between Disneyland and Disney World. I feel like when you're at Disney World, you're in this fortress that you can't escape. At Disneyland, you can hop on the shuttle, go home and have a couple beers and come back if you want. I did one day at Disney. The boys did two.
I couldn't do the second day. I know for you, there's an aversion to it. So to pull off 11 hours, that says something.
It was pretty fun.
What do you think made this different from other trips? Because as you've chronicled, your trips there have never quite lived up to expectations. Why this time? What changed?
It just was. I tried to let go of everything, check out the details, and enjoy myself. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to do that in over 50 years.
Wow.
So,
were you rooming with Dr. Phil? It sounds like something he would advise.
I had to pay extra for that, too. We started out the trip for 4 days at Marina Del Rey. I had never been there.
It's very pretty there.
Really cool.
Yeah.
And I love the ocean. I've become a beach bunny. I typically hate the ocean because I don't like sand.
There is a bunch of, you're right, to your
it's
credit.
It's kind of a pain.
There's sand a lot at the ocean.
I like it now.
Wow. Are we going to lose you to California? Are you heading out that
way?
No,
I will tell you this. On the last day, the boys went to Disney again with Jim, and they did their custom lightsabers for quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, the Galaxy's Edge was really cool. I was a gunner in the Millennium Falcon.
This is the whole new Star Wars land that's opened up at Disneyland.
Pretty cool.
And here's what everybody says. Now, I don't know. I didn't ask you this. That the lines are sometimes 3 hours or 4 hours long. Was that long of a ride?
It was 50 minutes, maybe.
That's not horrible.
No, they cut off passes for season holders, season Disney holders or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And I mean, going on, I can't decide which is better, Pirates or Haunted Mansion. It's a tough,
two classics,
decision.
Both good.
20-minute waits.
Well, that's the other thing, is they said, because Star Wars Land is so busy that the other rides, you just walk right on right now.
It wasn't the, I mean, 50 minutes was, but that's typically, you know,
that's
Splash
standard.
Mountains is sometimes 80-minute wait.
Yes.
So the Millennium Falcon, Jimmy Mack and Dylan were the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
and Michael and I were the gunner.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was there's six people. So then the people behind us were engineers.
So you have to, as the ride is progressing, you have things you need to do, right?
I mean, I don't think it's going to crash for reals. But
wouldn't that be horrible?
Yes.
It's so realistic.
But it's pretty cool when you go into hyperspace mode.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I didn't get sick. Usually I get motion sickness.
So you're in essentially, spoiler alert, but you're in some sort of a flight simulator, right?
Yeah. But they had the actual size Millennium Falcon, which was really cool.
Did Jimmy buy that? Did he even make an attempt at it? How much do you want for this? That's not for sale, sir.
That is so funny.
Come on. Everything has its price.
And then there's the cantina that you have to make reservations for, and there's the two-drink maximum. So you go into the cantina, and they have Star Wars drinks, and they're like probably $12 each, but they're pretty good.
And are there actors or cast members dressed as the denizens of the kid? There isn't? I'm surprised.
I thought they were, and somebody said that they were going to be mean to you, like, you know, they would be in the cantina.
Yeah.
And Jim was trying to engage this one bartender who would have nothing of it.
Really?
He was just so nice. We had a great time.
That's strange.
It's so funny. Have you ever been to a bar before with a two-drink maximum?
No, it's always the exact opposite.
I know, but they have to, you know, they have these reservations and they're moving people out.
Yeah.
So I had to make like five reservations. The last day when they went back to Disney, I started my day as soon as I got them on the shuttle to get to Disney. It was like this great sigh of relief.
Now the vacation begins.
Yes, and I went and had a Bloody Mary, and then I went shopping, and I was driving around in our Cadillac SUV, and I'm thinking, boy, I could imagine living here.
Yeah.
Not really. There is just no manageability with the traffic situation.
Right.
I mean, you could be going 4 miles away and it'll take you 40 minutes.
Right. That's very hard to navigate.
And it's not just the freeways.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Right.
And on my shopping quest, I did not buy one thing.
What?
I couldn't find anything.
Who are you?
I don't know. But
this
I enjoy Disney. I love the ocean. Yeah. And I didn't spend a lot of money. And I didn't drink that much either. I don't know what's happening.
Everything
to me.
I know about you is a lie.
I've decided
everything.
To be a nicer person.
This is not you. I don't know. This is like invasion of the pod people.
I'm with you till the nicer person part, because that's really too much.
Well, give me about 5 minutes with you, and I'm sure I'll come back.
Your family made no effort, like on the day that they went to Disney and you did not. There was no, come on, Mom, stay with us. There was none of that.
No, and Dylan is my youngest, and he, you know, towards the end of the 11th hour, I was really getting burned out, and Dylan's like, let's go on the submarine. I'm like, yes. I can't go. It's clear across the park. And Dylan's like, come on, we'll walk slowly. Do you want me to get you a wheelchair? I'm like, no. We can go first in line then.
Yeah, right.
So I walked across the park. We watched the fireworks as we were going. I went to the submarine, and that's when I got a little crabby because that was my last. I was out of gas.
Oh, yeah.
But they knew. They just, I've been called Disney Mom now.
Disney Mom.
Mm-hmm. I made it, and they didn't even know. They didn't even ask me to go the second day. They were so surprised that I made it 11 hours.
You survived a long day already. Wow. We're all impressed. This is very impressive. All right. We'll take a break, and then there's more of us, Bill and Wendy. We'll be by the meat tent, Wendy. That's how you know you've made it. I mean, in the early days, if they said to us, at some point you'll be by the meat tent by the McHenry County, you go, come on.
I mean,
there's no way.
Start at the bunny hutch, right?
Right. Right.
We've worked our way up.
Yes, obviously. Oh, a bunch of texts. First of all, many, many texts welcoming you back. And then several texts getting back to our crosstalk with Steve Cochran as he was trying to figure out who his cousin's children would be to him. What's the relationship? I know I said second cousins because that's what I believe to be true. But I'm wrong, apparently, because several people say, no, your cousin's children are not your second cousins. They're your first cousins once removed. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I just say cousin because it's really hard to figure all this stuff out.
Right. You don't need to show the family tree. You just say, this is my cousin, Ed.
And
we'll be by the meat tent. Cousin Ed and I will be by the meat tent if you need me.
Steve Cochran did not specify if it was his first cousin. He just said, my cousin.
So didn't you assume?
No.
You didn't? No.
I assume nothing because it makes an ass out of you.
Well, I don't need any qualifications on that. That's just an obvious.
Yeah, you're right. That your cousin's kid is your cousin once removed.
But no one's technically being removed from that situation. So why shouldn't it be your second cousin then? Shouldn't it?
That's why I just say cousin. I'm Italian. Yeah, I have a lot of
There's
cousins.
A lot of cousins. Right.
I don't know what kind they are. I just know they're cousins.
Why break it down?
I had a celebrity sighting.
Who did you see?
In L.A. Actually, this was at Disneyland.
Oh.
Was it Goofy? Because you know they're paid to be there.
Yeah.
I did not see Goofy.
Oh, Wendy. What kind of a trip? I'd ask for my money back. Can you give us all a clue and we will guess who the celebrity is that you saw?
Well, I had to
A-lister? Was it an A-list celebrity?
Not really.
All right.
I had to be told who he was, actually, by my boys.
All right.
So, late teens to early 20s are familiar with the show that he's on. Andy Samberg is also on the show.
All right, so that's Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes, and this particular gentleman.
Is it Terry Crews?
Yes.
You didn't know who Terry Crews was?
I didn't know who Terry Crews
was.
He's
very big and muscular.
I noticed that. I didn't look at his face.
Very
I was looking
muscular.
At his body.
Be careful because he's one of the celebrities who talked about how he was sexually harassed during the whole Me Too movement.
Yes.
I didn't do anything.
No, of course
not. You're talking about his body.
Well, I was looking at it. I'm sorry.
He can do that thing with his pecs that always impresses me.
The back and forth?
Yeah, the back and forth.
Work on that for the fair.
He and Ruth Bader Ginsburg are the only two celebrities that I've seen that can do that. And it puts me in a state of shock every time I see that.
Was he the dad in the Chris Rock series too? No.
Old Spice guy? I love him.
I think so, yeah.
Old Spice guy?
Yeah. The older. He's not current.
I'm trying to remember if that was him or not. I guess it could have been.
Jasmine, it was him.
Yeah, it
right?
was him, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's very funny.
He was just there with his family, and no one was bugging him. And
is his family ripped, too? Like, his wife and
totally.
Kids are all ripped?
Yep.
Wow.
Little kid, or his little baby. He had six-pack.
He was making his pecs go back and forth, the baby was? That's excellent.
Was he wearing a Bam Bam outfit?
No. But
you didn't talk to him, though, did you?
No, and my youngest, Dylan, was the one who said, that's Terry Crews. And I said, oh, my God, it is. And I said, go say big fan. And
walk.
And he goes, I don't want to bug him. He's with his family.
Well, there's something to that.
I know. None of us bothered him.
Good for you guys.
I don't know who my family is all of a sudden.
Everything you've told us about this trip is not like you or your family.
I know.
What's
going on? I really
had
a good time. I really did. And I really missed being here, though.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for coming to a job you love every day.
Sure. Agreed.
I missed you.
Yeah.
I missed Bertrand and Jasmine.
We missed you, too.
Yep.
All right.
It's all a statement. We made a statement while you were gone, and that's exactly what it said.
I don't care. I don't believe you, and I don't care. We do have something to give away because we have an action-packed show. I have been such a huge Ernie Kovacs fan. I know you have, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bought this biography probably 20 years ago and read it, and I loved watching the Ernie Kovacs show. Was it WTTW that re-ran it years ago?
Yeah.
He was so innovative.
Way ahead of his time.
Oh, my God. Like, these special effects were so orchestrated and carefully
and
planned.
Expensive.
Yes.
So expensive.
And there is an exhibit going on, and we're going to talk to the executive director of the National Comedy Center and the Ernie Kovacs Centennial Exhibit. That's going to come up at 10:30. But right now, we have a pair of tickets to see folk troubadour Kris Kristofferson. I love him. It's happening at the Chicago Theater Friday, November 15th. You don't want to miss this all-American legend performing his classics. And this is exciting.
What?
Merle Haggard's band, The Strangers, will be there as well. You can get tickets starting today at 10 a.m. They went on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Or you can call us right now, 312-981-7200. What number, caller?
Caller 7.
Lucky number 7, 312-981-7200. You'll score a pair of tickets to see Kris Kristofferson and Merle Haggard's band, The Strangers, at the Chicago Theater Friday, November 15th. All courtesy of us, Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
This is my ringtone when you call me. This is what I hear.
You know what? I'm going to make it my ringtone.
It's perfect.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
I love this song.
The Nairobi Trio at Lollapalooza, one night only.
Oh, you know what? They would kill.
They would kill. Journey Gunderson joins us right now. Journey is the executive director of the National Comedy Center, here to talk about the great Ernie Kovacs. And Journey, I want to get this out of the way right now. You have the coolest name I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, well, thank you for saying so. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Ernie Kovacs is someone that I didn't know very much about until maybe I was in my 20s. And Channel 11 WTTW used to rerun the Ernie Kovacs show. And they're black and white, and his lovely wife, Edie Adams, mm-hmm. Who was at one point part of the Nairobi Trio.
Right.
It was just amazing to me to watch these special effects unfold. For people who are listening right now who may not have heard of him, why don't you explain the genius of Ernie Kovacs?
Sure. And I'm glad that you segued in that way, because we really exist, the National Comedy Center, to recognize comedians as cultural innovators. And so we presume that the average person may not have a healthy appreciation for how influential Ernie Kovacs has been. Part of that is because his career was cut short by his untimely death, sort of at the peak of his creativity and people wondering what he would possibly do next. But really, celebrating a craftsman like Ernie Kovacs gets right to the core of our mission. His work, it didn't just push boundaries, it shattered them. And it sort of marked the advent of a new type of bold and irreverent popular culture. So it went on to inspire and influence Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, subsequently Saturday Night Live. Letterman cited Kovacs as an influence, and you can see that in the work. Also Johnny Carson. And so the list goes on in terms of how the genius of Ernie Kovacs and his nature to experiment and not feel bound by the rigidity of maybe a sitcom formula or other things that were sort of popular on television at the time, it changed comedy forever.
Journey, the story that I had always heard about him was that he would come up with these ideas or these concepts, sometimes just a very, very brief idea on screen, and they'd be so expensive, and they would fight with him and fight with him, and they'd say, that's our whole budget for one 30-second bit. Is that true? Is that the way he normally operated?
Yes, as far as my archivist and our researchers have educated me in putting together the exhibit that debuts in August at the National Comedy Center. It's something where TV was his playground. And, you know, there was a time he was given 2 hours, which is unheard of, especially today, you know, to do whatever he wanted. And he had to figure out how to fill that time with a $15 budget. And
what?
So, yes, I think depending on the idea, you know, he might blow all of that budget on one concept that he thought would fly. And otherwise, he was bringing in stuff from his own house, you know, his own personal objects just to play around with and experiment with. And it's incredible that this happened in the early days of television, when I think most people naturally, when they think back to that time period, again, think of more rigid, formulaic sitcom setups. And so Ernie was a genius.
He kind of combined radio and TV, which was brilliant. My only comment about this is, why was he not a leading man? He was so unbelievably handsome.
Well, that's a really good question, because that is very true.
He was so handsome. His wife was so beautiful.
It could be, I don't want to speak out of turn. My theory on that would be that he wasn't somebody that could be controlled. And again, his nature was to be completely experimental. The things he was doing felt surreal to watch. And so maybe that's not the type of person that you want to cast as a leading man who, you know, is supposed to be a certain way, let's say.
Although, to his credit, there were movies. I remember Our Man in Havana. He was a leading man in that. There was another movie or two where they did put him in that role as a leading man. And he pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know, just not enough chances. You just used the word surrealistic, which is so accurate, Journey, but I would almost put it, now I know this normally sounds like a negative, but I don't mean it as a negative. Sometimes it was nightmarish. When you watch those clips of the Nairobi Trio, it's almost like something you might have had in a nightmare, much less watched on TV, you know what I mean?
And when they breathed, you could see the rubber mask going in and out.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. This is something where, you know, I'm sure not all of it appealed to all viewers. And like you say, it could feel... I don't know what the word is, but, you know, beyond surreal, it felt like you were seeing something that was an experiment at the time, which in and of itself could make people uncomfortable as they're watching television, you know, and especially in the early days of what are these devices in our home and what are we going to see when we turn them on? And so it's sort of hard to express just how bold what Ernie Kovacs was doing was at the time. You know, nowadays everything is so fractured. There's so many options and things to tune into that almost nothing could surprise you in terms of somebody thinking, well, this will find an audience. So when you think back to the fact that there were, you know, only a few major networks, and this was the early days of TV at all, and people didn't have choice, it makes that level of experimentation that much more profound.
Sometimes with the Nairobi Trio, he'd throw a celebrity in, right? I remember, wasn't Jack Lemmon in there once, or Frank Sinatra, I think I remember, right?
Yes. You know, he collaborated, the list of folks that he collaborated with is pretty long, and in fact, skipping ahead a little, our advisory board at the National Comedy Center includes George Slaughter, obviously
Laugh-In.
Creator of Laugh-In, and... Yeah. You know, he and his wife, Jolene Brand, have been to Jamestown to the National Comedy Center and absolutely are emphatic in their praise for what it is that we're doing. And, you know, they were with him the night he passed away and remember very well, sort of vividly for us, what that was like and what it felt like in terms of the world being robbed of this genius who had so much more potential. And I think it's interesting also that so many people willingly cite him, you know, Rowan from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. It wasn't like anybody was insecure about having borrowed from him. People had such a respect for his innovation and his level of work that they, you know, outwardly said, yes, we're borrowing this from him, or this is, you know, influenced by him. And I think that in and of itself speaks volumes.
You mentioned Laugh-In, and Bill and I were both big fans of the show, and then watching old episodes, I'm finding it not as funny as I thought it was, but going back to watch these Ernie Kovacs shows, I'm sorry, maybe it's just my opinion, but like whip out a Percy Dove tonsils, it's still funny to me, yet completely bizarre.
Yes, definitely ventured pretty daringly between cerebral and bizarre, and you know, those, and created really some of the most inventive and influential content to that date or since. For example, his silent show, a half-hour comedic sort of tour de force with no dialogue, and Kovacs on Music, which was like a surrealistic mashup of image and sound, and this inspired generations of video artists, you know, comedy or otherwise. Those remain high water marks in the history of broadcasting. So the question of how much further could he have gone is, you know, something that, you know, we can only wonder. But what our job is now is to convey to visitors to the National Comedy Center that this is an important cultural icon that everyone should know about and appreciate, and we're doing our best in exhibit form to convey his brilliance and his genius. You mentioned those glasses. Among items in the exhibit, we do have the iconic eyeglasses for his Percy Dove. Yes.
That's worth a trip to New York just for that.
I would go just for that. And didn't they, when he would do that character, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they shoot it through kind of a, almost like a fisheye lens that distorted his face to some extent? Is that right?
Yes, and if you see the thickness of the eyeglasses in person, as I now have, it all makes sense.
I would wear those when no one else was around, Journey. I would just put those on and walk around in
You've
them.
Tried them on. Come on, be honest.
I would.
I'm wearing them right now.
Good for you.
No. We do, in all seriousness, take great care with our artifacts. If you met our archivist, Laura LaPlaca, she's brilliant and has been working hand-in-hand with Josh Mills and the estate, to make sure that these items, as well as incredible scripts and creative papers, are properly preserved but also presented, because artifacts, they need to be cared for and preserved, but they don't do anyone any good if they're not engaged with. And that's been our mantra at the National Comedy Center. Let's put some of these amazing archives and comedy that previously had no place to go, let's put them on display for visitors and allow them to glimpse with their own eyes this creative process. In the exhibit, we also have the makeup kit that he used to transform into his various characters, and the Emmy Award won posthumously for his ABC show, The Ernie Kovacs Show, for outstanding achievement in electronic camera work.
We're talking to Journey Gunderson, the executive director of the National Comedy Center in New York. We'll pick this conversation up about Ernie Kovacs in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Journey Gunderson. She is the executive director of the National Comedy Center, located in New York. There's a big anniversary. It's the 100th anniversary of Ernie Kovacs, so they're celebrating him. This is the sad part of his life. Even though he was making us laugh on screen, Journey, his behind-the-scenes persona wasn't always very happy. I know he was fighting a horrible custody battle at some point. How is he able to make people laugh when his own personal life was in such disarray?
Well, that's a question you could ask and insert the name of, probably dozens of comedy geniuses, and the question would still apply, unfortunately. It's something where in this community, and maybe this goes for all of the arts, it's not uncommon to find the very people who are making us laugh are struggling in their personal lives. I remember, this is a small example, but I remember even Daryl Hammond from Saturday Night Live, one of the longest employed cast members of the show in terms of duration, said he grew up in an abusive household, and that's how he learned to be funny, because he had to learn very early on, how do I break the tension in this room? And that point, the latter part of that is what I love and what we try to convey at the National Comedy Center. What is comedy? We kind of break it down, and it's about finding where the tension point is and breaking the tension in a room. And that in and of itself is a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, like you said, Ernie Kovacs, but also many others, are dealing with pain. And, maybe this is their therapeutic way of dealing with it, of trying to bring some joy into the world and making others laugh.
And Ernie's motto was pretty much nothing in moderation. He worked long hours. He drank a lot. He went to light a cigar as he lost control of his car and died. And when he died, he had so much IRS back taxes due. And we spoke to Edie Adams, and she did everything she could. She worked tirelessly to pay off every debt that he had. So she's a remarkable woman as well.
Yeah, and I think those things, you see those things pretty common in the entertainment industry as well, and it's something where we need to remember there's a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with opportunity. So, as an aspiring artist, you're trying so hard to find an audience, then you get big breaks, so to speak, where someone's putting you on television for 2 hours with a budget of $15. All of your energy, generally, if you are a talented performer and artist, you're probably likely also to be a perfectionist. All of your talent and energy is going into making that as good as it can be. And so, it's not uncommon to find that other parts of these kind of genius artists are talking about, other parts of their lives maybe aren't as well maintained or cared for. And I think that makes some sense. There's a lot of pressure on the creative. And you know, thank goodness his focus was where it was.
If anyone's heading to New York, it'll be the debut of the Ernie Kovacs Centennial Exhibit. It opens on August 7th. You can also go to ErnieKovacs.com and check out his website and stay connected to them. Very briefly here, Journey, the National Comedy Center has only been open for a year. Bill and I knew nothing about it. Granted, we're here in Chicago, but how did this begin?
Oh, great question. So Jamestown, New York, which is in western New York State, so closer to Chicago than, say, New York City. It's actually equidistant approximately between Chicago and New York City, is Lucille Ball's hometown. And it was Lucille Ball herself who said to Jamestown in the late 80s, you know, don't just celebrate me. Don't just have an I Love Lucy or Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz Museum. Celebrate all of comedy. Make Jamestown, my hometown, a destination for that. And so the National Comedy Center, which just opened last August, embodies that vision and is a 37,000 square foot, $50 million museum attraction that some people say, don't even call it a museum, it's an experience. And it really is one of the most interactive, high-tech, innovative museums anywhere in the world right now. But yet we've grounded what is a very immersive, interactive experience with artifacts throughout. So for those of you who want to stand in the presence of the DNA of the greatest of all time, you're seeing Charlie Chaplin's cane or George Carlin's joke archives and handwritten notes, or Harold Ramis's suit from Ghostbusters. But you're also filling out a sense of humor profile at the beginning that's loaded onto a digital chip around your wrist that allows exhibits to read the room and present you content based on your sense of humor. So,
wow.
We got to do a remote from there. Comedycenter.org, is that the correct website?
It is.
We got to go out there.
Journey, at the Baseball Hall of Fame, they won't let Pete Rosen or Barry Bonds. Who's the comedian you won't let in to the National Comedy Center?
Besides Carrot Top.
What a hot button question.
All right.
Luckily, no, fortunately, we actually took the approach conceptually and creatively that we approach comedy by genre and subject matter and really the bodies of work versus it being Mount Rushmore in its style. So while people ask that often in the development phase, because various folks were on trial for different things, how are you going to handle this? It wasn't as difficult to navigate for us as you might think, and our compass and guide was just the onus to the great storytelling. If it's a critical story to the history of comedy in America, we included it, and we didn't ignore bodies of work or pretend they didn't exist. But again, we're set up to talk about the artwork and the bodies of work more so than popularity of individuals.
We have got to run. It's so great to talk to you. How long does this exhibit run?
The exhibit runs, it starts August 7th and goes, you know, for several months beyond that. And I think it remains to be seen, you know, based on the popularity of visitation. And so, you know, we're going to launch it, like we said, August 7th and keep it up, you know, at least for the next several months. I should mention there are also many artifacts on display that are only on display this year, such as the iconic puffy shirt from Seinfeld that leaves this fall. And so there's an urgency to getting to the National Comedy Center each year.
We'll be in touch. We need to get a remote and go out to New
York
and see
this. Sounds like so much fun.
Thank you so much, Journey.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Journey Gunderson, the executive director of the National Comedy Center located in New York. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. On Fridays, we talk to Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Alexander, how are things? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's great.
Great
how are
to talk
with
to you
guys.
Well, Wendy and I were just saying this off air. We want to bring this on air. Both of us have cable or satellite systems that are no longer servicing the CBS network. They always do this thing where there's an agreement that needs to be made. And in this particular instance, the agreement wasn't made and we're not getting CBS. I don't know if it's affecting you where you are, but what do we do if one of our favorite networks is gone? What do we do?
Because of Big Brother, for gosh sakes.
Well, the first thing you can do is just kind of wait it out. That's, you know, not the great answer, but these are always bargaining tactics. It seems like this is what's going on. I believe it's CBS and AT&T are having the spat right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a waiting game with these sort of things, because one of them is going to crack eventually. They both need each other. It's just eventually coming to a financial agreement. In the meantime, though, the best way of watching CBS is going to be through CBS All Access, which you don't need AT&T or cable to do. It is a subscription fee, but I would say for streaming services, it's pretty worth it. The originals on there are pretty good. You're going to get your Big Brother live stream 24 hours a day.
Beyond the actual episode of Big Brother. Of course you are. I already have it. And that was the Twilight Zone as well. That's the reason I got it. You can get it through your Amazon Prime, or there are various ways to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I highly recommend that. And that's one of the bargaining chips that somebody like a CBS has now, is AT&T can say, nope, we're not going to broadcast you on cable anymore. And they say, that's fine. We got other places. So again, it's a waiting game. I think they'll figure it out. But in the meantime, CBS All Access is your best bet.
All right. Because I can't watch King of Queens anymore.
Oh, that's on reruns so many places.
I thought those were new episodes. All right. All right. Well, that's good advice. Because they keep telling you, if you go to your CBS channel on satellite or cable, it says, call, if you're upset about this, call this number. But does that do it? That doesn't do anything, does it?
If enough people call.
Yeah, exactly. Look, they're trying to put the pressure on so that they can get a better financial deal, CBS is, and same thing with AT&T. They're going to be pushing back and forth. Ultimately, you got to do what's best for you as a consumer, and if you want to watch the programs, I recommend just, frankly, cutting the cord and going to streaming, because these sorts of spats are just increasing over time.
Well, I said this the other day. Let's say your cable or your satellite provider gives you 300 or 400 channels. At some point, each of them is up for renegotiation. You could lose any of them at any time, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is why more and more people are going, quote unquote, cordless and just setting up a bunch of streamers that they can watch programs on. That's also why you have all of these new streaming networks are going to be launching in the next year or so, because everybody realizes, hey, you know, NBC could be pulled off of cable at any time. Instead, go over to NBC's streaming service. You can watch all of our current programs and also Friends.
Yep. All right. All right.
According to a texter, Dish Network still doesn't have HBO available, and it's been almost a year.
Wow.
So that's disheartening.
Yes, it is. That's a long time.
That's a long one. But to HBO's thing, they're just all about subscribers and whether they're getting it from cable or they're getting it from online, from HBO Go and HBO Now. It's the same price for them. And I don't have an inside track on the deals, but I have to imagine if you're subscribing directly to HBO Go, HBO is getting a bigger cut of it. So they're probably happy about that.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. All right. I hate for you to be the hatchet guy on this, but we got some bad news about the sitcom Will and Grace. Go ahead. Tell everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this next season of Will and Grace is going to be the final season again of Will and Grace. It's coming back for, I believe, 18 more episodes, and that's it. As Brett White, our resident sitcom expert here at Decider, mentioned to me the other day, it was actually renewed very far in advance for two seasons, so this has been in the works for a while. And the last season was good. It was a good show, but it sort of just trucked along and fizzled a little bit in the ratings. So it's not too much of a surprise it's going away. We'll see if somewhere down the road, 10 more years, they want to renew it again.
But this is, they're the ones who said, we'll pull the plug on this. The network didn't say, hey, we gave it a shot, we're not happy with you guys. It's them, it's the producers of Will and Grace who said, all right, we gave it its run and now we'll move on.
I think overall the revival trend has hit its logical conclusion. We've talked about this quite a bit on the show, but Roseanne was the big hit right out of the gate, and everything was trying to follow that, and nothing quite had the same results. So for them, creatively, they've said what they needed to say. For the network, it's probably fine, so they can move on to something newer and fresher. So it's too bad for the fans, but otherwise for them, it's a win all around.
Speaking of revivals, they showed a trailer for this Picard series about Jean-Luc Picard from Star Trek. saw the first trailer about 3 weeks ago, and it didn't do much for me. It looked like he was a botanist. It looked like he had some plants, and he was watering the plants. And I went, oh, that'll be fun to watch the captain of the Enterprise watering his plants for an hour. But then another trailer came out, and wow, does it look good.
I hope you guys don't think less of me when I say I watched that trailer and straight up cried. I could not help myself because Star Trek The Next Generation meant so much to me. The show just visually looks amazing. It looks like they pulled out all the stops in terms of the effects. But for fans of the old series, the big surprises that they pulled out, and these aren't exactly spoilers because they've been open about it, but a lot of the Next Generation cast is coming back. You have Brett Spiner as Data is coming back.
Yay.
They also teased that Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis, who play Riker and Troy, are coming back.
What about Quill
Wheaton?
One
of the biggest surprise.
Why do you want to know about Quill Wheaton?
I think we just pretend that never happened
right.
and kind of move on from
okay,
there.
That's fair.
But I will say, one of the biggest surprises, if you watch Star Trek Voyager, Jeri Ryan was on it as a Borg character called Seven of Nine,
yep.
and she's coming back to the show as well. And people were iffy on Voyager, but loved her, and they're so happy about her coming back for the series.
What's not to love? Could her suit be any tighter, for gosh sakes?
She seems to be wearing regular clothes in this new series. She has her hair down.
She's got a pantsuit.
A moo-moo.
Right. Right. But wow, what a switch from that first one where I went, is it just going to be about a guy who's retired and has nothing to do but fill time all day? To this, did they do that intentionally to fool people like me?
I think so. I think they didn't want to say a lot about the series until San Diego Comic-Con rolled around, and I was shocked at how much information they revealed during that panel, during that trailer reveal, just thing after thing happened, announcement after announcement. So, yeah, they got me.
All right, we can't wait for that. There's other things to talk about from the world of television with Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
The animals, trap.
Oh, I know that song. That's from Orange is the New Black. The final season launching on Netflix today. What can you tell us about the last season of Orange is the New Black, Alex?
Sure. From our reviewers who have checked it out, Kayla Cobb and Hannah Mento, who are both big fans of the series, they felt like it was a little bit of a mixed bag as a final season. There are certainly great things for the fans. Definitely watch through the end credits because there's a moment that they promise will absolutely make you cry. But for those who have been watching the series religiously, you probably know that it peaked at a certain point and then it's continued for another 2 to 3 seasons or so. So it's very on par with the last couple of seasons. But again, if you've been following these characters for so long, it's one of the longest running Netflix originals ever. It's definitely worth checking out.
I can't remember if I watched the last season. How long has it been since the last season aired? Ballpark.
It's been a while.
Okay,
it's
then
been,
I think I'm up to date.
Yeah, it's been a while, but you should be able to jump right back in, particularly because there's a new starting point, fresh new setting. It's very much its own thing and own story as well.
I have been binge watching Big Little Lies. I had heard people talk about it. I'm like, eh, I loved it. I'm all caught up. It had a finale. Then there was an alert on my phone that says HBO is saying they don't know where to go from here. No spoiler alerts, but there are places they can go. What's going on? Is it coming back?
That is a big question mark right now. You know, the history of that show is pretty funny because it was based on a novel for the first season, so it had a very definitive ending. You had all these superstar actresses in it, so, and it was even described as a limited series. That's how it was submitted to Emmys and everything. And then they said, hey, you know what? Let's do one more. What do you guys think? And then they all just got back together, made it a series, did the season 2. So they're in a very similar place right now where HBO is not even being cagey about it. It's just you have Nicole Kidman, you have Reese Witherspoon, you have Meryl Streep this season. Insanely busy actresses. If they can get them back together, if they do have a story for a third season, I think they'll do it, but nobody's going to commit 100% at this time.
And some turmoil behind the scenes there, right? The person directing the beginning of this season didn't have it look like last season. That's what I'm reading anyway. Is that true, Alex? Do you know?
There's been a lot of back and forth, and actually one of our writers, Megan O'Keefe, is out at the Television Critics Association's summer tour right now, and Casey Bloys, the head of HBO, responded to this, said, nope, no behind-the-scenes turmoil. But the short version of what was revealed, or reportedly revealed, was that Andrea Arnold, the director who directed all of the episodes, was told, hey, you'll have a chance to give this your own distinctive visual look, and then without telling her afterwards, they brought back Jean-Marc LA, who was an executive producer on the series for the second season, but directed all the first season episodes, and had him recut and reshoot a bunch of the season. And people were very, very upset about that. But at least according to HBO, this is the most recent word, nothing out of the ordinary happened. Everybody is fine with it. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more back and forth as things go on, but right now it's a little unclear which side of the story is true.
God, is Meryl Streep good at it? I can't even tell you.
She's just automatically good. Yeah, she just has to show up.
I hope she gets more. She's a really
good
two superhero shows, but from a strange angle. Each of them are taking their own kind of weird stance. What about The Boys on Amazon? What is that?
Yeah, all eight episodes of this dropped today. This is a very, very dark superhero series that is still very funny at the same time. It comes from Eric Kripke, the creator of Supernatural, as well as Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who, you know, from Preacher, they produced that, and it's very in line with that. It's basically about a world where you have Justice League-type superheroes, but they're all essentially evil, but secretly evil. They kill people, they murder, they take and do whatever they want, and there's this group that's colloquially called The Boys that features Carl Urban as the lead. Also, I want to say Dennis Quaid, but it's actually his son, is the star of the show. And they fight back against these superheroes. So again, very dark, very adult. Don't watch it with your kids. But I was very impressed by the performances and very impressed by the special effects as well. Are very, very good on the show. Highly recommend checking it out.
All right, that's on Amazon. That broke today. And then the other one is Pennyworth, which is the it's the butler from Batman.
Yeah, and because you demanded it, this Sunday at 9 p.m. on Epix, there's a new series with a hot young Batman's butler showing how he went on spy missions in 1960s London before he ever buttled, I guess. I will say, this is from the creators of Gotham, so our reviewer, Megan O'Keefe, who checked it out, thought it was ridiculous and over the top, just the way that show was. It's definitely not what you'd expect from a butler origin series. It's more just a ridiculous spy series with tangential connections to Batman. But for fans of the series, it's definitely a weird, fun one to check out.
A couple of texts wanting to know if... I'll just read you a quick list of some of these shows. This Is Us, Blacklist, Blind Spot. When and are those shows coming back?
Well, Blacklist and Blind Spot, I believe, are coming back this fall. I can definitely check on that for you. And This Is Us, same thing. I believe it's coming back for two more seasons, and then that's it.
Yeah.
They're going to be wrapping everything up. But those should be back in the fall.
I'm wondering about The Preacher. You mentioned Seth Rogen, and he has...
This is the end for them, right? I think this is their last season.
But it's coming back...
Yeah, it's coming back on August 4th.
Okay.
There's going to be a double episode, so clear your entire Sunday night for this. This is the final season of the show. I believe there's 9 episodes total, so 8 weeks. It brings the Preacher gang straight up against God, fighting God and his new allies. If you ever watch that show, for those listening out there, it's also over the top, violent, but also has some really interesting things to say about religion. Even if you've never checked it out before, there's going to be big action for this final season on AMC.
I'm missing my Jesse. I love him.
Alex, I just saw this today. I know this is a quick one to pull out on you, but Jeff Bridges is getting his own show on FX. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, this is called The Old Man, and it's not just about Jeff Bridges wandering around in his everyday life. It's actually about him as a ex-CIA spy who gets pulled back into missions. I don't believe we have a debut date yet, but it's Jeff Bridges playing a spy on FX, so it's going to be quirky, it's going to be weird, it's going to be interesting, it'll be visually different, so... certainly sounds fun to me.
It does sound like fun. And now this one is the opposite of fun. I'm late to the game on this, but I watched the first episode of Chernobyl yesterday.
It's great.
Wow.
It gets even better.
Oh, wow. I thought I knew.
Yeah,
it's one of those stories where you think you know it, and then it turns out you don't know it.
Yeah, it's been kind of amazing to watch this one truck along just in the conversation, because this classic HBO series where it just built every single week in terms of people talking about it and watching it. But I don't think it stopped. It's just kept going. And people like you and other people in my life just keep asking me, hey, have you seen Chernobyl? Have you checked it out? It's one of those ones that's going to continue to build and have a life long past its broadcast date.
It's weird that everybody smokes in that show.
Right.
It really
no,
is.
You're right. Yeah.
I mean, they have nothing to lose, so
I guess.
Not?
It's amazing.
One of the behind-the-scenes amazing parts of that to me is you would almost think if they were pitching that to a network, they would sell it as a movie and say, we're going to make a movie about the story. But to do it as, I think it's 6 hours long, that's incredible that they went for it, that they bit and they said, yeah, that's a six-hour story for sure. Run with it.
Well, part of it is that they wanted to be as accurate as possible while still using actors and still telling a story that had been written out through mostly fictional dialogue. An interesting thing, if you've been checking out the show, there is a companion podcast that the producers did, which is up on iTunes and Android and wherever else you can check out podcasts, and they talk about what they changed, why they changed, what was accurate, and get very, very deep about the show. So if you're into it, definitely check that out as well, because it'll only help flesh out the experience.
Did I read somewhere that they were going to continue this with other disasters and events, or did I dream that last night?
There's been a little bit of back and forth, and in fact, Craig Mazin, the producer, told one of our reporters, Kayla Cobb, he said, you know, if we were to continue it, I wouldn't do Chernobyl 2. I would focus on some other disaster and do something like that. He was certainly just speculating. But then, to be perfectly honest, when we posted that up on our website, Craig Mazin said, no, there will never be a Chernobyl 2. So we said, all right, sorry, I guess you gave us misinformation. So we created a little bit of the back and forth about that. But I would guess this has been such a big hit that if they do have another story to tell about another disaster, you're not going to get a continuation on these characters or anything, then maybe they would delve into it in a similar way to, say, True Detective, where it's unconnected stories every season.
I'd like that.
That makes sense. Alex, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for all the information, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much.
Alexander Zeldman, the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a quick break, and then some news, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Chicago Bears, Adam Hogue is going to talk to us.
I don't think he will now.
Is very good.
Okay, you went him back over.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
You threw him back in.
You guys promised me there wasn't going to be any singing.
Right. That was the initial promise.
No one told me that.
And then Wendy went back on our word, didn't she, Adam?
She
Adam,
did.
Is it okay?
Did.
Do you mind if I refer to you as our Bears insider? Would you be comfortable with that?
I guess it's better than Bears Outsider.
Yeah, that's me. That's my title, Bears Outsider.
Training camp starts. Bourbonnet. I'm sorry, I'm a little riled up. I'm back from vacation. So it started yesterday, right?
So they all reported yesterday. We'll have our first practice. Well, not my first practice. I won't be practicing, which is a good thing. But they'll take the practice field about 3 o'clock this afternoon. And that'll officially, you know, get going with the grind of training camp. But, yeah, everyone showed up yesterday, and we got a chance to talk to Mitch Trubisky and Khalil Mack and some of the big-time players from the Bears. And, you know, guys showed up. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Tariq Cohen showed up in one of those slingshot cars.
Yeah, I saw that car. That was something.
Really?
Yeah, so for those that don't know what a slingshot is, the one that has, like, the three tires in the back. There's two tires in the front and one in the back, and it apparently goes really fast. It looks incredibly dangerous to me, and if I was Matt Nagy, I wouldn't necessarily want my starting running back squealing around Bourbonnet in one of those things. But, hey, you know, that's the joys of the first couple days of training camp. But,
Wait, it looks like a little bit later on today. It looks like a combination Batman meets Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, it looks like a cartoon car.
It does.
You don't buy that off the rack, Adam. Where do you get a car like that?
Usually you need to be a famous football player who gets contacted by a car company that wants free publicity on the first day of training camp. That's usually how it works.
There's one on eBay right now for $36,900. Oh. You want me to make an offer or buy it now?
Do the buy it now.
All right.
Make sure
just
we get it.
Buy it now, yeah.
Yeah, don't mess around with that.
Bill Leff at WGNRadio.com.
Yeah, put me down for at least one. Adam, would it be fair to say that there is more optimism as the Bears enter their camp than ever before? I don't remember the last time the Bears came in just saying, yeah, we're the team to beat. Good luck, everybody.
Yeah, I think you have to go back to 2006, which was the year they ended up in the Super Bowl. But even then, I don't know that there was this much optimism, and certainly this is the most optimism in the 9 years I've covered the Bears. You know, last year I was personally optimistic that they were going to make a pretty significant step forward. I didn't necessarily think they were going to win 12 games. I had them more at like 10 wins. But this year it's a lot different. I mean, they won the NFC North. Everyone knows they're good now. And I think everyone expects the defense to be pretty darn good again. I think if you look at some of the statistics of what they accomplished last year, it's actually going to be pretty difficult for them to match, you know, the high performance they had last year.
Well, they have a tougher schedule this year too, don't they? A much tougher schedule.
They do, and that's a great point to bring up, because they were playing a last place schedule last year. Now they're playing a first place schedule, and that's actually the one of the things I'm most excited about with this season, guys. Because if you look at the schedule, every single week is an intriguing matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously week one, Packers, the NFL kickoff game is going to be huge. But even week two, they go to Denver. They're playing Vic Fangio. Defensive coordinator just left the Bears to be the head coach of the Broncos. So that's an intriguing game. Week three, they're playing Washington, but it's on Monday Night Football. So that's an intriguing game. Then even when they play the Raiders, which isn't the most exciting opponent maybe, it's in London. So that's an intriguing game. The schedule is just loaded all the way through, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Week 7, Wendy, they're playing the U.S. women's soccer team. Did you see that coming? I didn't see that coming.
I'll watch that game.
Yep.
I want to know if Bill Leff is excited about the Bears. Because,
I am.
All right, good.
I am.
We're glad to have you back.
It's been a long time.
I'm on that.
Usually, yeah, Bill, I'm talking to you about Jay Cutler, and you're not very happy. You're usually kind of cranky. But, you know, there's reason to be excited and be in a good mood when we talk about the Bears now.
They've made some very good moves. I like what I'm seeing.
So this training camp begins today. And what have they been doing on the off season? I'm just curious, because don't they train on their own all year long, or have they not
been?
Well,
so the way it works is basically in mid-April. So they're not allowed to do anything from like the point the season ends until mid-April. They're on their own at that point. Then they come in and it's voluntary. Everything from mid-April until what they call mandatory mini camp in the middle of June, which is just 3 days where you have to show up or you can get fined. Everything for that 2 month period is voluntary. But when I say that, most teams get upset if you do not show up. So it's technically voluntary, but if you don't show up, you're not really going to be in the good graces of your team. However, it still does happen, especially when there's contract disputes. In the Bears' case, their attendance was at like 99.9%. And I put it that way because every once in a while you might miss a day here or there because of a family issue or something like that. But every single player was in the building. There were no contract holdouts. There was nothing like that. Everyone is on point, and then once you get that mandatory mini camp done in the middle of June, then everyone has another 5 to 6 weeks off before they show up to training camp. They kind of enjoy their summer. That's kind of how the off season goes. And now, from this point on, everyone's here, and this is really the grind of the season all the way until, you know, their last game of the year.
Adam, if there is one question about the Bears, the 2019 Bears, it's the kicker.
Yep.
We still don't know who the kicker is, right?
We do not know. It's been kind of a circus at times, to be frank. I mean, they had, I'm even forgetting the number, but it was at least 8 kickers that were at rookie minicamp back in May. They whittled that down to 4 or 5 guys that were, I think 4 after that, that were in what they call OTAs, the off-season training activities. And now it's down to 2. Eddie Pinheiro, who they actually ended up trading for a couple months ago from the Raiders, and Elliott Fry, who was kicking in that AAF league that you guys might have heard about in the winter that only lasted like 7 weeks before the whole league imploded.
Yep.
So neither of these guys have ever kicked in the NFL before. Pinheiro was with the Raiders in the preseason last year before getting hurt. I would say he's probably the favorite to win the job right now, but it's going to be interesting to watch that daily down here, especially – guys, because they're going to be kicking in front of fans for the first time since Cody Parkey had the double doink. So when they miss, fans are going to be on them. You know they are. And then these preseason games, I think, are going to be huge. And I'm actually fascinated to see that play out because these preseason games don't matter. So if you're, like, say, the 25-yard line at 3rd and 1 and you're Matt Nagy, why not just kick the ball?
Sure. Give it
because
a shot.
You got to get the kick in to see this, what these guys can do. So we might see some funky stuff like that in these preseason games.
Yeah. Now, there was a dream that Robbie Gould could come back and kick for the Bears, but that fell apart. Why do you think it fell apart?
Well, it was just a matter of, look, they used the franchise tag on him. When I say they, the San Francisco 49ers used what they call the franchise tag on Robbie Gould, which basically means they lock you in for one more year at a pretty high price, but it's really used as a negotiating tool to negotiate a long-term contract. Now, I'm a little surprised that Robbie ended up signing a long-term deal, which is what ended up happening at the deadline to do so a couple weeks ago, because I really thought he wanted to be back in Chicago. But there really wasn't an opening to make that happen this year. The only way it would have happened is if the 49ers just gave up on contract talks and decided to trade him. But you can't just trade your star kicker if you don't have a replacement option, right?
Right.
So it was pretty far-fetched for it to ever happen. It would also cost the Bears a lot of money, and quite frankly, they don't have a lot of cap room right now, and they might need to make some additions here and there and sign some guys to extensions. So it was pretty far-fetched as a dream. But it will be fascinating, guys. If these two kickers aren't performing in the preseason, it would not be surprising to see them have to go out the last week, right before that game against the Packers, and have to sign a veteran kicker that might get cut from another team.
Mm.
Interesting. And how's the health of the football players? Any injuries yet?
There are just some minor ones to start camp, the most notable being Ha Ha Clinton Dix.
I win. I just wanted him to say that.
You win, Wendy.
Yeah, there you go.
Hold on. Here's your $5.
What's wrong with Ha Ha Clinton Dix?
Every time I come on this season, you guys should make me say that name some point.
All right.
Challenge accepted.
There you go. But, yeah, no, he's got a knee sprain, so he's not going to be ready to go at the start of camp. Of course, he came over from the Packers, and will likely start at safety as long as he's healthy. So that's the most notable injury right now.
Adam, will you or any brave reporter ask Matt Nagy about his singing of the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field last week?
I will now.
Will you?
Wait, I wasn't here.
Wendy,
you
weren't here for this? Yes, we have it. This was Matt was at the Cubs game, and he was asked to sing during the seventh inning stretch. And when he gets to the line, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack, he made an interesting substitution. Listen to this.
Take me out to the ball. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Oh, my God.
Will you please ask him, what's the background on that?
That was a tribute to Clinton Dix.
Here's my honest-to-God plan with this, guys. I'm not afraid to share this on the air.
All right.
I need to wait for the right moment.
Yes.
So it's got to be either, maybe I can get him on our podcast again, the Hogan Johns podcast,
yes,
something like that. Needs to be a loose setting.
Right.
And all I'm going to do is I'm just going to say, hey, Matt, can you pronounce the word peanuts for me? That's how I'm going to do it.
Would you please do that? That would be the best thing in the world, Adam. Thank you.
You guys got to be maybe a little patient.
Right.
You know, it's not going to happen today, but there's going to be in the next, before the season starts, before that game against the Packers, the opportunity will present itself, and I will pounce.
Well, let us know, and we'll have you on to promote that.
Okay.
That was the best version. He was actually right on
key
and everything.
Oh, the key was perfect. It's just, it was an interesting option.
Is that your special surprise inside the Cracker Jack?
Merry Christmas, yes.
I heard it live, actually, and I was like, did he just say... Yeah, and then I kind of forgot about it for a couple hours, and then I saw it blow up on Twitter, and I listened to it multiple times.
Yeah.
He said it. Yeah,
I did too. I'm watching it live, and then I go, and then I kept rewinding. I was Zabrudering that tape back and forth, back and forth. No, he definitely said it. There's no question.
All right, now I feel sorry for him. What is wrong with me? I feel bad for him.
Well, it's just, Wendy, what it is a testament to the fact that you can get almost anything you want at a Major League Baseball game now.
Ha 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 ha.
I'm excited about the Bears, Adam. I really am. I have been, but now more than ever.
I am too, guys. It's going to be a fun season. I have certainly covered some bad Bears teams, so I'm personally very excited to cover this team. I mentioned the schedule. Every single week it's going to be, whether they win or lose, it should be a fun team. They already have a fun team to cover. That's too, another thing about this group is they have some personality. They like each other a lot. The head coach, I really believe this, guys. Matt Nagy, if they win, he could be as big as Mike Ditka. I know that's hard to envision, but he's got that type of personality, and he's actually even friendlier than Ditka. So, you know, Ditka's his own guy. I don't know if you could – maybe you can never reach that status in Chicago. But if they win, he's got a chance because he's a very good football coach, I think. And so this could turn into a group that ends up being – you know, a group remembered in the city for a very, very long time.
I hope you're right. I hope he gets his own restaurant. I hope they have peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I'm ready for it.
All right. Thank you, Adam.
All right. Bye, guys.
That's Adam Hope. He's our Bears insider.
I like Matt Nagy, but I feel bad.
I like him more now because
you would, because you're a 10-year-old boy.
He obviously made a bet with a friend and said, listen to the Cubs game. I'm going to sing the seventh inning stretch, and I got a word substitution for you. Listen to this. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some penis and Cracker Jack.
Wendy, several texters are saying, I'm listening to Matt Nagy sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. I don't hear anything wrong. The original version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game has the line, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. But Matt Nagy went in a different direction.
What did he say again?
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Yep. I like that version better. I think that's more fun. I hope every major
league. Where do you buy that?
Well, that's the thing. You can't get it at every vendor. There's two places in the park. I can't legally tell you where, but there
I thought
are two
that
different
was a
places.
Churro.
Wow. All right.
Did you miss me?
Yeah. Yes.
First and only day back.
If you've not heard the bonus hour, it's basically 60 minutes of what you just heard Wendy say. So tune into us on the bonus hour. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo. She is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.